This is Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the most listened to podcast for parents by parents.
Hey there, and thank you for tuning in to Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the podcast talk show for parents. I'm J.R. Celeste, your host and publisher of Successful Black Parenting Magazine. I want you to right now tell all of your friends and followers about the show. We are live today. We haven't been live in a long time, guys. So bring all your friends in. You're going to want to hear about this show. Sharing is caring. Know that our hashtag for the show is hashtag backtalk. Now, my guests today are Jamil and Tracy Samuels. They are publishing authors and a husband and wife team. Jamil is the author of Pass the Torch, How a Young Black Father Challenges the Deadbeat Dad Stereotype. Bravo, bravo. But they have other books together. They're the co-owner of The Amazingly Sensational Kids, which is also called TASS, right? TASS Media Company, which publishes superhero children's books. And they spread awareness for autism and children with special needs. So I want to welcome you guys to the show today. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
No worries. You guys have some great children's books. You sent some to me. I love them. Amazingly Awesome Amani. You have Sensational Super Sandy, which is Amani's sister, right?
Yes.
And all this was inspired by your son Trey's courageous journey as an autistic child navigating the harsh realities of life, and he uses his imagination in these books. So I just want to thank you guys, because there really has not been a lot of books catering to children with autism. So I know that Holly Robinson Pete has an autistic son. We're friends on Twitter. But she wrote a book too because of the same thing. So you guys are right there together. I hope you guys can connect. So Holly, if you're listening, you know, you might want to tune into this. Somebody tag Holly Robinson Pete right now. Tag her.
We love her.
We need to see this. Okay.
Absolutely.
But tell our audience a little bit about yourselves and about Trey.
Well, our books, as you said, are based on our son, Trey Armani. He is on the autism spectrum. He was diagnosed at 5 years old. So we didn't have a lot of information about autism before we found out. That's why we kind of missed that window of early intervention, because as we did our research, you know, my wife is a social worker, so she has a lot of experience.
He didn't have the information. I did.
Okay. That's why I told you to talk.
I know, but you know what it is? When you're a parent with a child with autism, it's different than being a social worker and dealing with children with developmental disability. And, you know, as parents and you're co-parent with your partner, and you're seeing the signs and, you know, your family's telling you, oh no, you're overthinking it. You start to question your ability. You start to question your training. And that's what happened with Trey. Cause, you know, I just remember one day saying something is wrong with him. He's off. And everyone's like, oh, you're diagnosed. And I'm like, no, I'm not. There's something off with him. And, you know, my husband was very quiet as a kid. So everyone else, he's quiet. Leave it alone.
Yeah, I was telling her that, you know, put him in school and let him get around other kids and he'll be able to start speaking. Because I didn't interact with my classmates until about, what, second grade. So I was a quiet child, but I did my work, you know. But in observing Trey in the preschool setting, we saw that he wasn't interacting with kids and he was by himself a lot, kept to himself, wasn't speaking. You know, other kids tried to talk to him, he would smile at them. So we were getting a lot of complaints from the teacher that the other kids felt uncomfortable around him. They felt he was laughing at them. I observed him in pre-kindergarten, in public school, in the public school setting. And we saw him walking away from the group, laughing, having a conversation with himself. So it was actually his pre-kindergarten teacher, Miss Knight, that actually stepped up to us and said, you need to get him checked out and get him tested.
I know there are a lot of parents that question whether it's them or is it just in their head? You know, is it really something going on with the child? Or am I, like you said, overthinking it? Right. What would you say to a parent who's actually going through that right now? What would you tell them to do?
I would say, trust your gut. don't think you're overthinking it. You know what you're feeling. It doesn't hurt to rule it out. And that was the issue. Ruling it out, my son was flapping his fingers. He was having stims. He was hearing sounds. He was going on underneath the table. He was exhibiting the signs of autism. For us, it's a rule out. Don't matter what anyone is telling you, your family, rule it out. Early intervention is the key, and we miss that window. So when we go out there, we tell families, if you feel it in your gut, something is wrong. And our pediatrician told us he was fine. And I said, no, there's something wrong with him. She said, no, he's fine. He's developing fine. He met all his milestones. I said, there is something off. And my gut kept on telling me there's something wrong. Even when we first got him tested, they gave him like a communicative disorder. And I said, no, that's not his disorder. That's not his diagnosis. It's wrong. And I remember the psychologist looking at me like, well, I'm the psychologist. I said, well, I'm entitled to a second opinion. And I know that this diagnosis does not fit my child's behavior, what he's exhibiting. So early intervention, trust your gut. You know, sometimes parents are so caught up in their own issues, their own denial. You know, I tell parents, you got to mourn that child that you thought you were going to have in order for the child that you have, in order for them to succeed. So just go out there and it doesn't hurt to rule it out and get your child tested.
Yeah, and that was the issue. A lot of people get upset. They start to blame themselves. They want to hide the child. They don't want to bring the child out in public for fear of rebuke or, you know, ridicule. But, you know, your personal feelings are hindering that child's development, as my wife said. So.
Yeah. Okay. That's great advice for parents that who may be wondering, you know, should I get my child checked? Or maybe he's just like mom, or when she was a little girl, or dad when he was a little boy. So it's all right, you know. So that's what happens, I think, a lot of times, and until you cannot ignore it. I'm going to ask Jamil, can you move closer to your wife? So that I can get you. You look like you're hanging off the screen just a little hair.
Oh, yeah, it's the chairs we're sitting.
You love each other. Get close. There you go.
Chairs.
Just so we can make sure we get you. You're off the screen just a hair. I want people to be able to see you and see you well. So when did you, I'm going to ask mom this. I'm going to ask Tracy. When did you discover Trey's autism, and how has it changed your lives?
It has changed our lives dramatically. I never thought we would have a children's book about children dealing with autism. Diagnosis, it's a whirlwind emotion, because you go through the denial, like, why is this happening to me? I did everything I'm supposed to do. And, you know, you're kind of dealing with your own emotional issues. And I tell parents, you got to really put that aside, because you're not at fault. You know, Trey is the best gift we have ever received from God. And, you know, I mean, the way how I was never a patient person. Trey has made me so patient. He changed the whole dynamic of our family and how we are as individuals, how we look at parents' needs, just everything. I mean, I just love to see him grow. And the more he develops, the more he gets services, the more he says things. And I'm like, a physician told me that my child would never speak. And now I can't stop him from speaking. I can't stop him from telling me, well, you know, mommy, I don't want to wear that. I'm looking at him and I start to laugh, because I never thought we could have those conversations. Yeah. And it's just a whirlwind. I just want parents out there who are not getting the services, who are fearful, because, you know, sometimes in our community, you know, no one speaks about it. So you don't know what to do. And I just feel like there's a need in our community to talk about autism. You see a child doing something that is inappropriate, no one wants to say anything. Help that parent. It's so overwhelming when you don't have no one to talk to about autism. You have no one to talk to about what's going on with your children. And that little getting services, it makes such a difference. And I'm just happy that we're here and we're talking to parents and we're making a difference. I'm a social worker, but I never thought that it would evolve like this. And just appreciated for it.
Now, how old was he when you finally got the diagnosis?
Trey, we knew something was wrong at 5, but I think the diagnosis came like at 6 and 7, the actual diagnosis of autism, the official diagnosis, because we got him tested like 3 different testing. We got him tested at Cohen Children's Center, and they were the final ones to say, no, he's on the spectrum. He's exhibiting every sign on the spectrum. They did a diagnosis there, and that's when he really got it. And once he got that, then he was able to get the appropriate services. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the right diagnosis, you can't get the services. So, and that's right. Important to have.
Right. Now, Jamil, You said you guys didn't know much about autism at the time. So what was going through your mind when you got the diagnosis?
It hit me pretty hard because, you know, as you said at the top of the show, I wrote a book on fatherhood to, you know, heal my traumas about being a child that was abandoned in the past. And that book celebrated me as a new father, like, you know, what I'm going to do differently. And just being a new dad was such a source of pride for me. And then to find out that he was autistic, he wasn't going to develop as a quote unquote normal child. You know, because when you have a son, your firstborn, in that book, I talk about how happy I was that he was going to be a son. My firstborn was a son, legacy building and heir to the throne type of conversations, you know, and you have all these dreams and plans. And then, you know, here you go is a curveball. So it hit me pretty hard. And just the fact that I didn't see a lot of the signs in the early going and I didn't have the information, you know, I felt like I failed him in trying to get him that those services that were needed. I didn't do enough to get him, you know, on the right track in the early going. And, you know, I missed a lot of the signs. My wife was telling, you know, she had, as she said, she had the gut feeling and she kept saying, and I was with that parade that was like, nah, you're overreacting. You know, I was quiet. So we just put him in school. I was right alone in the peanut gallery saying the same thing. So, you know, it was tough that when it happened, you know, it strained our relationship for a while. She was pretty upset at me. She was very angry. So we had a lot of that to sort through on top of the denial. And then we came to the realization, okay, we can't take this too personal. We have to get him the services. And once we got him the services, the speech therapy, occupational therapy, because before he got diagnosed, we tried everything. We tried music therapy, visual therapy. We put like little sensory therapy. We had, imagine having a child in an office with little, you know, taped things on his head, wires coming out of his head, trying to figure out his brain activity. We didn't know what was going on with him. We just know that he would get hurt and he couldn't speak to us. He would cry silently. He'd see the facial expressions, but no sound come out. Yeah. The TV would change, the rice grains on the TV, when we're, you know, static on the television, he'd run out of the room. We didn't know what that was. We thought that he was just scared of the television. You know, a lot of these signs that we know now, once you've done the research, you know, the flapping of the arms, you know, he would talk one word if he would speak at all. One word sentences. So, you know, phrases, you know, he knew a lot of the stuff. He knew the letters of the alphabet, a lot of the stuff, the, you know, educational things, the milestones, but he couldn't communicate. So that was the issue, communication. And we thought, okay, he's young, he's still learning how to speak. That's the issue, but it wasn't, you know, and we missed the early intervention window because of it. So I put a lot of that on myself. So it was hard for me, but you know, my wife is patient and loving and kind, and she, you know, we worked through it together. You know, she's making faces, but she it was a team effort.
Okay.
It was definitely a team effort.
No worries. I'm picking up something in audio from a search, like a Google search or something.
Yeah, that was my Apple Watch. That's my Apple Watch.
Okay. Just so you know. Okay. I just thought, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
all right. So, mom, now what was going through your mind when you got the diagnosis?
I was blaming myself. I was very depressed. I went into a depression. I did. There was times where I couldn't get up. I was like, what is going to happen to my child? I was very worried. I was depressed. I was angry at my family. I'm going to be honest. I felt like I didn't get the support that I needed in order to save my child. But I remember that day when Miss Knight called and I was at home from maternity leave with my daughter. And she called and she said, something is wrong. Come to the school. And it was the most best day of my life because someone is finally co-signing what I was feeling. It wasn't in my mind. I wasn't going crazy. And I was so happy. I remember calling everyone and saying, I'm getting my child tested. I don't care what anyone says. I'm going to do what I have to do because I felt like I failed him. I felt like I failed my child. And I just got out of it. I was like, it's not about me. I said, okay, God, what is it you're trying to teach me? And just knowing that I had the support of my husband, I finally had the support of my family, had the support of everyone to really go in and get services for Trey. And once we did that, it made so much of a difference. Even his schooling, placing him in the right appropriate setting for school was so important I started to feel better about myself. I wasn't as depressed because he was doing things. He was verbalizing. You know, I can see his future again. I can see everything clearly because we got the services.
The school setting is very important, as she mentioned.
Right. Now, I wanted to, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to talk about this a little bit because we're going to be running out of time. But I want to also address the fact that you guys, what you went through, I know a lot of parents go through when they find out that they had a child with special needs. Right. And, you know, the guilt. And that's difficult. So I want to address that before we get to that. They pop this up on the screen, but I'm not ready quite yet for this book. I know we're running out of time, but let's talk about that guilt for a minute, okay? Because I happen to have had a brother with special needs, and I remember the guilt my mother felt. So that was deep. And she kept telling my dad that something's wrong. He's like, oh no, he's all right. He's all right. So I know that happens a lot, and I see it happening in other families. That of people who I know, it's hard, but you know, it's also difficult to diagnose autism from an early age. So I don't want you know, I know you guys feeling guilt, but it's something that happens. A lot of people miss the diagnosis, especially in African-American children.
We're 5% more likely to not be diagnosed early. We are. And I think the fact that you're seeing something and you're seeing something is not right, you have to check it out. And because we tend not to talk about stuff and we're focused on the guilt, okay, I did something wrong. Maybe I didn't take my prenatal. We're blaming ourselves, and that child is sitting down there waiting for us to just get out of ourselves and do what we have to do for them. You know, that guilt could destroy our family. It almost destroyed us. Yeah. It really just almost destroyed our marriage. Yeah. It almost destroyed our marriage, but you know, because of faith and support and knowing that we love each other and we wanted our child to get what he needed, we rose above that.
I think that a lot of the issue quickly was that we saw the signs and we didn't do anything about it right away. So that's where the guilt comes in, is that you're ignoring the signs. You might not know the information or know the research, but you know when your child is not speaking and he doesn't make a sound, but he's making the crying face. He fell down, but he's not making any sounds. So you know these things are not, this is not right. This is wrong. What's going on? So to not, you know, pick up on that and follow up on it, I think that's where, with the issue, that's where the goal is.
I totally get it. You guys are experts in your own child, but you're not, this autism thing is new to everyone, right? It's everyone pretty much, but like I said, our children get missed all the time. You since have had another child, correct? Or how many? You have one more, a girl?
One more, yes.
One more.
A girl. Okay. Yes.
Okay, and she's not on the spectrum.
No,
she's so not.
How old is she now?
She's nine.
Going on 16.
Yes. So how is it having siblings together? Do they now, because he's verbal now, so they interact now? Do they argue, fight, typical sibling stuff?
Their interaction is normal, but initially it wasn't. And she couldn't understand why he wasn't speaking to her. And she was in his face. Thank the Lord for her. Yes. Because there was a time that they told me I couldn't have another child. So I thank God for her. She's our miracle baby. Yeah. You know, she's in his face. She's constantly asking him what's going on. You know, you have to talk to me. Yeah.
She was the reason why we started the book series, to explain to her, because if she's feeling like that, you know, other children that are not on the spectrum are feeling the same way. His classmates, she brought to mind his classmates in the early ages, in pre-K two. We started school at 2 years old. So it brought to mind the question that they might have about why he was not reacting, why he's just smiling. She thought the same thing. He's laughing at me. What's wrong? You know, because we were so focused on getting him checked out and getting his services, she felt that we loved him more than she did, than we loved her. So a lot of these normal emotions that she was feeling, we felt that, okay, we need to explain this, you know, and, you know,
her voice too.
Right. To piggyback on my wife, you know, he had to talk. Along with the speech therapy, he had Asia Emily Sandy therapy as well, because he had to speak. She kept talking to him, demanding that he say something back. And, you know, he learned to have a conversation. It was good to have that physical person in front of him 24/7, along with the therapy, because therapy is like once a day, a few times a week. But we had another child that he can bounce off of outside of school. So it really helped him to thrive as well.
Okay. Well, tell me, now it's time. Let's talk about the books, because this was the first one, correct? The Amazing Adventures of Awesome Armani.
Yes, that was the initial book. See, I'm a writer by trade, so I tend to write a lot. And my wife, the great, intellect that she is, she said, you know, you're writing too much. You know, kids don't want to read chapter books at 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. The picture book will make more of an impact. So actually the green book, The Amazingly Awesome Armani, was the first book to be released.
That was the first one.
Yes, the entire series is based on that book on the screen right now. So you are correct, you know, technically correct. We wrote that book first, but we did the children's book series because we wanted the pictures to tell the story along with the words. And we put out that red book after the Jitters and Fear book came out, which was first day of school. Yes.
Oh, I love that one, the Jitters and Fears. Did you show that? That's what's on your shirt. Yeah.
So, yes.
That's awesome.
Yes. So people, think this book is about Halloween, it's about scary, but it's about his first day of school, because children on the spectrum, they, one thing we noticed with Trey is that he has a routine, everything has to be done a certain way, and if you interrupt that routine, you put him out of their comfort zone. So this book talks about, you know, it's based on his real life interactions with kids in his new school, the school that he currently goes to. He's in the middle school, in the high school now. I'm still saying middle school. I can't. He's growing so fast. He's 14 now. But he started this school in Glen Cove, New York, Tiegerman School, at 7 years old. This was the fifth school in 5 years. So he started school at 2. We kept putting him in different schools because they didn't know how to deal with him. The classes were overcrowded. There weren't enough teachers in the room. So this school was actually a school for language and communication development that had multiple teachers in the classroom. He got, you know, individualized attention that he needed, and he really started to thrive in the school. So we, you know, did a book about that school because we were so grateful for all the help that they did for him. And it talks about, you know, his first day in a new environment and the emotions that we feel. The jitters and fear are the emotions. We made them ghouls because they chase us around, right? It's not just kids, it's adults. Whenever we start a new job, you know, we're nervous. So it's a fear of the unknown. So once he gets comfortable, he's able to scare the jitters and fear away. So that's pretty much the basis of that book. So
I see. No, I love it. Now, are the books more so for the child with autism, or for their siblings, or for the parents, or everyone?
We like to say it's everyone. For kids of all ages.
So everyone can get something from the books. Yes. Now, Jamil, you wrote an article for Successful Black Parenting Magazine about how parents can help their child make friends with a child with autism. Now, is this an issue usually for children with autism making friends?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's every autistic parent dealing with a child. We just want one friend. Could he just have one friend? Mm-hmm. It's difficult for them to have friends outside of the school setting. I have a friend right now. We try to do different plans with other people, but understanding his behavior and his language and his social skills, some kids are not liking that. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we wrote a book was to educate other kids that these kids are amazing. They're awesome. They're great friends too as well. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's trying to get them into social groups so they can have friends. It's the most difficult thing and the most stressful thing for us right now is Trey not having a friend.
And a lot of things we stress in the book series is that he does a lot of the things that quote unquote normal kids do. He loves to play sports. He loves music. You know, in fact, music was the way that get him out of his shell. You know, music therapy, plays multiple instruments. So these are common hobbies that other kids have. So his issue is communicating, knowing what to say, you know, picking up on social cues. So this is stuff that we're teaching him now as he transitions into high school. We have him in applied behavioral, you know, analysis, ABA therapy, which teaches him different situations and how to respond to different things. And this will help him communicate with other kids as well. But that's the issue, is him talking back, knowing what to say in response, how to start a conversation
naturally
and not being robotic, you know. So he's doing a lot. He knows how to talk to us, but, you know, he sees us every day. You got to get out there and apply it to the real world. You know?
He's trying.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he wants to.
Well, your article gave great advice to parents on how to get their children to befriend a child with autism. So I want to refer everyone to our website at successfulblackparenting.com. It is there now live. I hope you guys saw it. It is up there. And it's great advice. So step by step on what you can do. And it kind of tells your journey a little bit about Trey as well, and why it's important that even children with autism have these social experiences with other children. So I really appreciate your article. I think it's definitely needed. Tell me about a time that a child or a parent might not have been so friendly. Because I know one of the issues I have had with my brother, he wasn't autistic, but he was special needs, and he was nonverbal, was that he looked what people would say was normal, right? But but he wasn't. And you knew as soon as he opened his mouth that something was not quite right. And I can remember a time I took him to Six Flags in New Jersey, Great Adventures. And I was going to put him on a roller coaster, but he has to say hi to everyone and touch them, right? Hi, hi. Like, he's the mayor. Hi. And he's a big guy, you know? And so the other guy turned around ready to fight him. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, he's special needs. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's just being friendly, you know? And so have you ever had to deal with anything like that?
Absolutely.
Yes.
That was the turning point in our journey.
The soccer field. Yes. Parents laughing because the sensory issues, he would see a fly.
Dragonfly.
Great at soccer. Well, once any sensory issue came in, he was running off the field.
Yes.
Parents are laughing, have their children's laughing.
Pointing fingers at him.
I could not understand it. I'm like, obviously there's something. He's great. You see him, he's leading the team with the soccer, at soccer, but they're laughing. And I could not, I couldn't take it. It was the most, I broke down crying, but like, parents are supposed to teach your children that every child is different. Right. You see this child exhibiting things. Trey's a nice boy. He's kind to everyone.
Always smiling.
Mm-hmm. But to see parents laughing, I could not take it. You know, he never went back to soccer after that. I'm going to be honest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's great at every sport. Basketball, great. Golf, great.
Bowling,
great. But it's just the environment of parents not understanding. And that, this is why I said to my husband, we need to educate parents about autism so they can educate their children how to interact. A child running off the field because of sensory issues is not for parents to be laughing. They should tell them, you know, there's something going on, but Trey's great. He's a nice boy. And that was the turning point. I said, we need to educate. I said, we're here, we're a voice, we need to go into our community so these children can feel comfortable as well, that they can be comfortable on a soccer field, they can be comfortable playing basketball, because Trey, he's great, he's tall, I mean, he can play ball, but because of these social cues and these social issues, the society is saying, okay, you're supposed to be this way. Everyone said to us, he didn't look autistic, and I said, what does an autistic child look like? What does an autistic child, he was exhibiting behavior. We didn't think Trey, you know, he doesn't look autistic, but he's autistic.
It's very important because children take their cues from adults, right? You know, they may have their first impression in the school setting, but when they come home, it's up to the parent to, if they have questions, to say, oh, let's find out, you know, what's going on and why he acts like this.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the reason, and this is what we try to get across. You know, the parent has to lead, you know, responsibly and talk about it. If you're not going through it, doesn't mean that, you know, you should be distant or aloof from the issue. You have to embrace it because this is the society we live in. It's a melting pot of all of different backgrounds, cultures. You know, you don't know what the person is going through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is the most important thing that you want parents to know?
Get your child tested. If you feel something is wrong, stop blaming yourself. Early intervention is key. Talking to someone, don't sit there blaming yourself. Early intervention is key. And
Have empathy. If you're not going through the situation, be empathetic to people that may be, you know, don't laugh at a child that looks, you know, weird, quote unquote. You know, be empathetic because you don't know who's watching. You know, it's easy to laugh and make jokes and dismiss, but it's bigger. It takes a bigger person to embrace the situation as a teachable moment and try to, you know, understand. You know, Asia's book Sensational Superstanding is all about understanding. The back cover talks about her understanding. She felt the same way. Once she understood what was going on with her brother, she became a whole different person. Her attitude changed. Mm-hmm. You know, she was his biggest champion. Nobody could talk bad about him except her, you know.
So of course.
So you asked about the interaction. Yeah, they fight like cats and dogs. You're constantly in the room. Stop it. But that it took a long way to get to that. It's 9 years of therapy for Trey at this point. So you know. So okay. It takes a while.
All right. Tell our audience where they can purchase your books.
Okay, our books are available on our website, theamazinglysensationalkids.com. It's spelled as it sounds. Also, it's on Amazon. It's on Target online, Walmart, different retail outlets as well. Also in the Sister Shop. It's in Jersey yes. Mall. They were nice enough to put our books in their store. The mail's at Jersey Gardens. If you're in the Jersey area, Elizabeth, New Jersey, the Sister Shop has our books available as well.
Yes. Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you, Jamil and Tracy, for coming on our show today. So thank you guys for being here.
Thank you for having us. We really appreciate this platform. Thank you. Continue to do great things as well.
No problem. And I want to thank all of you for participating and listening to Back Talk and Successful Black Parenting Magazine, the live stream and syndicated podcast for parents. Don't forget to follow us too on Twitter and Facebook at Black Parenting One, that's the number one, and on Instagram at Successful Black Parenting. Our website is also successfulblackparenting.com, and it is full of great content to help you to thrive and not just survive as a parent. Be sure to rate our podcast. And until next time, I wish you all the best and much success. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to Back Talk by Successful Black Parenting Magazine. We'll see you soon.